this is Pierce Brosnan. No, sorry. Hello, Colin Farrell. No. Hello, this is Liam Neeson. No, hello, this is Tommy Tiernan on showbizmonkeys.com. Around this town, I'm alright. Around this town,
I'm alright. I mean, no consequence when you playing with the fire. The first question I had for you, which is often the first question I have for comedians, what originally drew you to stand-up?
Maternal deprivation. So I have psychological needs that only the adoration the adoration of strangers can heal.
Yes.
So I guess there's a reason why people look for attention, you know.
Yeah.
So I think stand up also suits my mind in terms of not even philosophy, but I guess it just suits me. I think there's great healing to be had in laughter.
Okay.
You know, great mischief. And I'm quite I'm not able to really do things that I've no interest in. So I wouldn't be suited to a 9-to-5 job. Or I'm amazed at the people who can do that, you know. But my mind is a bit it's too restless for that kind of employment.
Right.
So stand up just suits me, you know. And I love the art form of stand up.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it's not always executed well. The idea of it is just, it's so, there's so few restrictions on it. Because theoretically, it's just one man or woman talking to a crowd.
Yeah.
So you can talk about anything. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to, no one else has to approve your ideas. The ideas don't have to be, funded by anybody.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to. It's the approval thing. So I just think it's an incredible art form. You know, and when it's done well, it's magnificent. I guess they're the things that attracted me to it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounded like just a really nice love letter to stand-up comedy right there.
There you go. Well.
Now, yourself personally, what are some of your favorite topics to cover on stage? I know over your career you've gone across the entire gamut of possibilities of what to bring up as material on stage, but maybe these days especially, what kind of things are you really enjoying talking about while you're up on stage?
And one of the things that I'm enjoying talking about at the moment is mystery and a refusal to be rational.
Mm-hmm.
And a delight in that not everything can be explained.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's okay. I know that American culture is, it's hell-bent on having a kind of irrational explanation for everything.
Yeah.
And I don't think, my feeling from Canadian culture is that it's not the same at all. That Canadians are much better at living with doubt or something, or are just less hell-bent on finding reasons. And I'm not sure why that is. Maybe it's because maybe it's because the Native Americans have had left more of a residue in Canada than they did in America, or maybe it's the European influence. But I find Canada much more comfortable to be in. I'm a disciple, almost, you would call, of a great man called John Moriarty.
Uh-huh.
Who was an Irish, I don't know what you'd call him, really, a mystic, I suppose.
Yeah.
He actually taught in Winnipeg for 5 years, I think, in the late 70s. Yeah, in the University of Winnipeg, he taught I think taught European literature or English literature or something like that. So I would be a big fan of his, and I guess I'm interested in those types of things, you know, the kind of strange stories, you know, stories that aren't kind of folklore, I suppose, you know, stuff that, now I have to say that, you know, you can have all these interests during the day,
mm-hmm.
walking around and reading the strangest books in the world and all that, but when you get up on stage at night in front of 1,000 people, if you can make it funny, they'll listen.
Yeah.
They're not interested in your personal philosophies or the books that you've read or the men you might be following, unless you're funny about it. I find this is such a great challenge, you know, because you'd be reading, you know, say you're a religious person.
Yeah.
And you spend all day reading books about Catholicism, right? And then the challenge then is, when you go up in front of 1,000 people that night, is to make them fall off the floor laughing. That I find is a fantastic challenge of stand-up.
Yeah, regardless of where you're coming from.
It has to be funny, yeah. So that's it's so democratic like that. And also stand-up audiences, I find, the less patient they are, the better.
Okay.
You know, the more demanding an audience is, the better. The less indulgent an audience is, the better. So they crack a fantastic whip, and that's the challenge of it. You know, is obeying them.
Right. And I guess, yeah, you have that philosophy because it keeps you as an artist and performer at your best.
Now if it was up to me, I would just be I'm as funny in normal life as I am here talking to you.
Right.
Which is, you know, every 3 or 4 minutes I might say something funny, but it's not constant, like, you know. But that's, you know, who the hell is gonna pay $40 or $50 to hear this? That's
right.
Not what people want. People want your...
I wouldn't mind if people did. That would mean...
I know. But, you know, people don't pay money to see Usain Bolt walk around the house.
Yeah, yeah.
They want to see him sprint. You know, they're not really interested in his... in him strolling. that's not what it's about, you know. So we... you have an obligation,
yeah.
I think, to the public. And that's the mountain. Climate.
As far as you know, being on stage and the things you talk about, you've definitely been dubbed with the word controversial a few times,
yeah.
Which when it's thrown around, I don't know, for some reason, from what I've read and I've seen you in other interviews and obviously seen your comedy itself, it seems you kind of relish in that kind of label.
I'm bored by it, to be honest. It doesn't seem relevant to me.
Okay.
It's not something that I court.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it's not something that I encourage. But it's happened, and I think that as culture constricts, so as the so much of modern culture seems to be fed through the same machine. Which is, I guess, part of it is the idea that it's a very televisual culture that we live in now.
Yeah.
And television has to be family friendly, and it has to be corporate friendly, and it has to be sponsor friendly, and all these types of influences that can make it anemic.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to what I said earlier on about stand-up not having to play by those rules. That stand-up is a much wilder thing. So I guess that sometimes stand-up can appear controversial, but it's not really. I mean, you know, what's happening in Syria is controversial.
Right.
You know, I think in a sense that historically the role of the fool has always partly been about undermining everything. You know, I guess, you know, undermining the rich and powerful, but also undermining the poor and powerless, that there's no safe place from the food. You know, that everything is up for grabs, that there's no, that the fool isn't a social worker and he's not a puppet of the powerful either. So I guess that philosophy will lead you into trouble, because if you're reckless on stage, I think that you're easily chewed by certain monsters, and those monsters are the media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I honestly don't believe that people would ever walk away from a show of mine saying that that's a controversial show. I've said stupid things, and do you know what I mean? I've said lots of them.
Yeah.
And I've said things that, when they're taken out of context, are indefensible. But I think that they, in the moment and in the ceremony and in the wildness of stand-up, I think it's kind of excusable. You know, and I don't see myself as controversial at all. You know, I'm not. That's not what I do. I see my job as being funny. But you know, but part of that, I don't get it right all the time, and I am sometimes stupid. But that's okay. I'm on the verge of being able to live with that.
Okay, almost there.
I'm nearly able to live with it, and when I am totally at peace with my mouth, I'll probably shut up. But at the moment, there are still troubles between my ears, so I guess I'll be venting for another while.
Yeah, I find it, just to touch on what you said there, like, I find it very interesting how much the media, I think, does play a role in that, because I've been to countless, you know, open mic comedy shows where obviously the media isn't present. It's just a basement full of, you know, a few people. And the things said there in the name of humor that are genuinely funny and with the right context are far worse than anything that you or many other comics have ever said that the media covered. But because of the viewpoint and who's actually listening, it's obviously not considered this big, dramatic, horrifying thing.
I think as well, when you're listening to somebody, I think if part of you knows that they're coming from a good place,
mm-hmm.
even though they might say stupid things, but if you know, if you kind of trust them, if you trust the spirit of that person, that's a huge thing. You know, we've all listened to people who are toxic, and you kind of think, well, I don't want to listen to this person anymore, because actually, I'm very uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some people get that listening to me, but I'm a lover of people.
Yeah.
You know, and I love the engagement of stand-up, and but I am sometimes out of control, and I suppose that's part of the, you know, the wilderness wouldn't be the wilderness if there wasn't some danger in it.
Exactly. But yet, yeah, people leave your show without any kind of negative feeling, or generally without that negative feeling. So I think it's because they do trust you.
I think so, and I think that, you know, they might leave my show thinking, Jesus, he's crazy.
You're right.
But they won't. I don't think they'll leave the show thinking that I'm nasty, or that I'm deliberately controversial,
right,
or that I'm. Those are things you can. A journalist could come to the show and write any of my shows and write something, and then you won't believe what he said. He said this. That is so, that's wrong. But that, you know, that's also very irresponsible of the journalist to do that. But anyway, look, that's, like I said, it's, once you get tagged as being controversial, you know, I was going to say a few times, it's probably happened to me 10 or 12 it's a very hard tag to lose. So, and to be honest with you, I'm not trying too hard, but I'm totally bored by it. It doesn't sound like me.
I totally understand that. Now, on to a specific topic that, just because of when it's all happened, I'm just generally curious on your thoughts. The new Pope was chosen.
Yeah. it was like a scene from a nursing home, wasn't it? It was just the succession of really old men who didn't seem entirely sure of where they were.
Right, yeah.
And we're, of course, very disappointed in Ireland that there's no Irish Pope, but Bono is busy.
Right.
So we're waiting until he has to just extricate himself from a few musical responsibilities. And then we're... Then he's ready. So, fingers crossed, Pope Bono the First.
Yeah, well, I mean, the age that that the Pope Francis is, it won't be that long, I think, until we go through process again.
He's 76 or something. My father is 72. And if I was to say to him, in 4 years' time, you're going to lead a multinational organization with 1.6 billion followers, he wouldn't have been able to do that 30 years ago, never mind 4 years down the line.
Uh-huh.
So, These are old, but I mean the Francis seems, for the moment, in charge of his faculties. So
yes,
you know, God be good to him, and there's nothing wrong with having good people in prominent positions. And if he's a good person, then I know that the organisation that he's in charge of is talk about controversial and corrupt, negative. But he might be a good man.
So we shall see. Now, of course, we're talking because you are coming to tour Canada. In general, do you like coming here? I know you've toured across the country before.
I've never toured in the springtime before. I've only ever been in Montreal during the summer, and the rest of the time I've gone coast to coast in Canada during the winter, and it's been tough. You know, it's always been damp. In the Maritimes, damp and grey. I've never really ventured out of doors in Montreal or Toronto. Saskatoon, I remember as being, if hell was icy, that's how cold it would be.
Yeah.
I remember there was kind of blue skies on the west coast by the time I got to like Edmonton and Calgary and Vancouver and places like that. So I'm just from a kind of a fresh air point of view, I'm very much looking forward to being there in the springtime. And I've always found Canadians receptive to my comedy, which is a fantastic surprise and a pleasure to be able to tour a place as magnificent and huge.
Yeah.
Is God Almighty? It's a fierce gift, you know, to be given. I'm looking forward to it.
And with the tour, it must be nice to have that Just for Laughs brand backing you.
Yeah, well, I suppose if I was trying to, if they pull out, I'll ask Tim Hortons. that all that kind of stuff just makes it easier, you know. They're a very capable, high profile organization, and I've a few good friends who work for them, so I'm in good hands.
How has Just for Laughs as a festival helped you in your career so far?
Again, it's all, you know, it's all been kind of, I wouldn't say accidental, but, you know, there's no great plan on my part. So
yeah,
I go to the Festival of Montreal, and If I do good shows, people say, "Do you want to do a tour?" And I say, "Okay." You know, that's about it, really.
Yeah, you're not like looking for a specific route to take or anything.
Not really. No, I think I probably was when I was younger, but I'm just kind of thinking now. Look, all you have is each moment, and if the opportunity to tour comes up, and if I find the country, like, I would have no interest in touring America,
mm-hmm.
No interest at all. I can't think of anything more depressing. But, you know, I was in Montreal last summer, and I did some shows, and they went down really well, and the guy said, well, hey, why don't we, you know, we'll get some of your stuff out on TV, and people like it, so why don't we do a tour? And I said, absolutely, let's try.
If someone from Winnipeg or Saskatoon or Vancouver or Toronto are coming out to a Tommy Tiernan show, What can they expect, or what can they not expect when they come to see you in theater on this tour?
Well, they can expect a man of average build and average height.
Yes.
Talking about stuff he's not entirely sure about.
Okay.
So they can expect hope. That's as much as I can promise. I would be going on stage hoping. So and like I guarantee that, but after that, God only knows.
Yeah.
You know, stories, mischief, good heartedness, controversy, brackets. So I don't really know, but a good time, I hope.
Showbizmonkeys.com.